Shalom and welcome everyone to this week's ICEJ webcast. I'm David Parsons, your host today, and we're trying to sort out the very rapid, incredible developments in Syria. Just in the past 2 weeks or so, a regime that had been in power for well over 50 years, the Ba'athist Party around 60 years, and all of a sudden, swept away by this amalgam of jihadists and others. And so we're talking about the new rulers of Syria. You're going to get a lot of information today because our guest is Dr. Yigal Karmon, who is the president and founder of Memory. Good to see you, Yigal.
Good to see you, David. You.
Now, there's a long resume here. Memory is the Middle East Media Research Institute. Yigal is a world-class expert on counterterrorism and intelligence, diplomacy, and research into the Middle East. Retired IDF colonel, he was in Amman, the Israeli Army intelligence. He was a counterterrorism advisor to two prime ministers, Yitzhak Shamir and Yitzhak Rabin. I think I first met you when you were deputy head of the delegation in the talks with Syria. They started in Madrid, but it was in Washington. Yossi Ben-Aaron was the head of these talks with the Syrians. Maybe you'll tell us a little bit about that. But Yigal has been around a long time. He's testified in Congress. He's briefed the Pentagon, the State Department, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice on all these jihadi groups throughout the region, the FBI, National Security, the European Union, the European Parliament, the UK Parliament, the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, NATO. So we have an excellent guest today. And I remember when October 7 happened, our next webinar, you were our first guest because you had put out a paper about 2 months before, something's going to happen in September or October. And I always turn to you when things really get turned upside down here. And I really appreciate having you today.
Thank you, David.
All right, well, can you first, let's start, you were in the delegation heading talks out of the Madrid Peace Conference after the first Gulf War, and you sat there with the Syrians, and it was like a cold, cold room. Tell us about the Assad regime a little, how long they were in power, and how ruthless were they?
Well, all in all, it's almost 50 years. The talks there, they were kind of forced to come to those talks. They didn't want to join. They wanted it to be together with others, to remove any sign of being in a separate room with Israel. I remember at the time that they decided at some point that they don't come to the negotiations. We were on our way to go there. And the American delegation, delegation that ran the whole thing told us, don't go. They didn't want to have a picture where we come to talk and there are no Syrians. So Yossi told the driver, go, go. We don't hear them. And we get there, a lady from the State Department stands out and tries to tell us, stop, don't go. And Yossi said, I'll talk to her, you rush into the building. And we all went into the building. And of course, the media saw that we come and there are no Russians and no Syrians to talk to. But they, when I used to bring documents to show what is their position. So at some point, Ben-Aaron tells them, look, we recognize you. Do you know, you are the Syrian delegation, the Syrian Republic, call it. Anyway, do you know who we are? So the head of the Syrian delegation picks up the American invitation and he begins reading from it. So Yossi said, if you didn't have that, would you know with whom you are talking today? So the guy says, well, wise guy, we don't know who you are, what are your borders? You have this, 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 different years. What are your borders? I was ready for that. So I came up with a paper where the Mohammed Hassanein Haikal, the chief advisor to Abdel Nasser at the time and later to Mubarak, he said when Egypt accepted 242, he said, for us, 242, the Security Council is one synagogue in Tel Aviv and 10 meters around it. So I said to him, you know, recognize this, and the rest we negotiate. Just recognize one synagogue in Tel Aviv and 10 meters around it. He asked, who said that? I said, Haikal. Haikal was very known.
Yeah,
and so
top
he
Egyptian
said,
diplomat.
Ah, Haikal. Push the paper from him goodness. Like that's a nobody, don't talk to us about that.
He's in all the history books, yeah. Wow.
They were not willing to accept anything, they were forced to be in this in these negotiations, but other than that, they were not there, mm-hmm. there and not there at the same time. Mm-hmm. It didn't help them much because the other way, by force, by armies, didn't work either.
Yes.
So,
But the Assad regime was this Alawite minority rule, oppressive over its the other minorities and the Sunni majority. That's why they had the uprising. But part of what they kept the country together, they were the most pure in their hatred of Israel. And what you're talking about is just how pure they were. They weren't even like the Egyptians. They didn't even recognize one synagogue.
Nothing. But how did they come to power? The French were there as colonialist power, and they developed the minorities to be to their help. They thought, who would help us here?
The minorities. They were the mandate power.
In the mandate time. And so they said, only the minorities will be on our side. And they brought many of the Alawites, who are a tiny minority, some Muslim-Christian combination of strange sect in Islam. The Sunnis, of course, don't recognize them as anything, as not Muslim at all. They are a deplored sect in Islam, like others, so like the Iranians themselves. So they brought them into the army. They developed them to be their loyalists.
That's fascinating. It was the
and
French
this is what
who put the Alawites in power, even though they were like 10% of the population. Yes.
But all of the regimes, dictatorial regimes, take minorities to be their loyalists because the majorities are against them. So that's the trick that they played. And the Alawites remained in power after the French mandate ended. And they became an oligarchy of officers and military people. And that's how they took over. First, there was a very known one, Salah Jadid. And then following him, and then the Assad family took over, and with a arm, with an iron fist and horrible, torturous ways, which now come out in pictures, how they would torture their opponents, people who ask for their rights. It was a horrible regime, and it came to an end finally.
So it was like Bashar Assad pulled a military. It was one military officer pulling a coup over another to become the dictator. After ruling 25 years, he hands it over to his son Bashar.
Yes. And in fact, before Bashar, the elder brother was to be
Bassam.
The head. Yeah. But he died in a car accident. So
accident?
Well, who knows? Maybe. Yeah. You know, if you go this way. So Bashar was the second choice, but he proved to be as cruel
as his father.
And
but then the people, as when the Arab Spring hits, in 2011, 12, yeah, 13, yeah. In Syria, it turned into a civil war because the regime, the Assad regime, cracked down so hard on it, harder than some of the other Arab countries.
Yes, yes, and that's where our figure of today begins his career.
Okay.
In that time, Gilani tried his way, and at the time he was, he passed through a variety of stages in his life. Mm-hmm. He was ISIS, mm-hmm. he was
Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda in another name. But he is a Syrian nationalist with a beard. Mm-hmm. I call him a man of all seasons. In humor, I would call him Sacha Baron Cohen, in the film The Dictator.
Aladdin.
He put this beard. But this guy, is a seasoned politician. He is with the Turks, with the Sunni world, that's his main, this is what he is. But then he would talk in different languages. He talks to CNN, not one mention of the Quran, Hadith, Allah, nothing. I used to joke.
We're gonna be kind to women, to all the minorities.
Everything, and he will protect Christians, and he will protect the Kurds, and he will protect this. But he, in 2014, he didn't shy away from asking for Israel's help. Mm. And he got it, yes. Mm. Not help in his rebellion, help in people, his people were injured, medical help, yes. Nothing but that.
Was he part of somehow cooperating with Operation Good Neighbor?
No, not that. But he was under the pressure of the regime,
yes.
of Assad, and he didn't shy away from talking to Israel. Even today, he personally does not mention Israel, anything.
Hasn't said anything about the bombing campaign where in three or four days Israel's wiped out the Syrian military.
Until now, nothing. Wow. Until now, nothing. And I guess he knows that he might need Israel.
Yeah.
Because while he began this last attack to liberate, quote unquote, Syria with the help of the Turks, there is a built-in conflict between him and Erdogan. Erdogan wants to take northern Syria and maybe more to Turkey. His loyalist and nationalist guy in Turkey, Bahçeli, he says, Aleppo is ours. Aleppo is ours. What is this nonsense? And that's what Erdogan wants. He doesn't say it. He wants to be, in a way, not fully occupier, but to be the calling the shots there.
But is he the new puppet master of Syria?
And at some point, Gilani will clash with him.
Uh-huh.
There are rumors that already Erdogan confiscated all his money in Turkish banks. Uh-huh. Not yet beyond that, because he wants Gilani to finish the job, uh-huh. to remove everybody else. But at some point, the clash between the two is inevitable.
Uh-huh.
But then, Gilani, I kind of say I understand the poor murderer, so forgive me for this combination. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to finish him off. The Iranians want to kill him. All the minorities, everybody that wants a free Syria wants to get rid of him. The Turk who help him actually wants to take the land.
Mm.
So where does he go? Israel, maybe. It's had it not been so tragic, it would have been funny.
Yeah.
Because people pay with their lives for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
David, if I may say a word about what was revealed in these 10 days. As mm-hmm. I say, there are decades that nothing happened, there are weeks that decades happened.
Yes.
So what happened? We had an image of Iran, an image that they built, a superpower, almost Sunni, with all their proxies, Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood and others, half Sunni, all hegemonic power in the Middle East. But the truth of it is that Iran, with a Shiite majority, is no more than 10% in the world of Islam. And not just 10%, but a part of Islam that it is regarded by the Sunni as heretics, as people that are to be put aside, to be put down, not respected in any way.
The 90% Sunni majority holds them in contempt.
Despises them. Mm-hmm. Now they got their years of building their imaginary power mm-hmm. and legitimacy, Islamic legitimacy also. Mm-hmm. All this is gone. They came back to their real size and less. Mm-hmm. Now everybody understands who they are. This has been revealed. Also, the status of Russia has been revealed. They also created to themselves a nuclear power, but also seemingly a conventional power. Well, a conventional power they are not. And now they are so scared that they will be killed there that they sent huge planes to go out. They made an agreement with Assad to be in Syria 49 years. Mm-hmm. Forget it. They are moving out before they are killed there. Mm-hmm. These two truths have been suddenly revealed. Iran is a nothing of a state. And by the way, we should talk about how to deal with Iran without a war. Mm-hmm. This is very important because no one wants war. And Russia, to its real size, they fight Ukraine for such a long time
and don't manage.
Then the conventional power is not serious. Mm-hmm. Iran's conventional status, that's why they are struggling to have nuclear power, because they are not really a power. They scared everybody, and they are nothing.
The Israeli Navy just went up the coast and went into the port city, the Syrian port city of Latakia, and destroyed the Syrian Navy, not much of it, but destroyed it.
Yeah.
But there were Russian ships. Had they already left?
And they went out of the port to the sea.
They left as soon as it looked.
But Israel wouldn't hurt them. But they were out.
But you wonder, that's cutting it close. If there's Russian ships nearby, this is kind of risky. But Russia abandoned Syria fairly quickly.
After an agreement to stay there 50 years.
Yes.
Everything in these weeks, everything happened.
So his name of war, Abu Muhammad al-Julani,
yeah.
Or Golani.
Julani.
Real name is?
Is Ahmad al-Shara.
Ahmad al-Shara.
There was a foreign minister in Syria, I don't know if they are from the same family, Farouk al-Shara.
Yes.
Was once.
He was the foreign minister,
yes.
Very high.
But I don't know if they are the same. Yeah. It's a common name, okay. A family.
So he has an Islamic beard, he's Islamist. He first left Syria as a young man to go fight jihad with ISIS or Al-Qaeda or ISIS in Iraq, has come back, supported by Turkey. He's sitting there with the Syrian civil war on sort of a back burner, sitting up in that northwest corner along the coast, getting armed and trained by Erdogan in Turkey. And in 2 weeks, he sweeps into power. Is he the de facto leader? They've got a prime minister.
Well, this is questionable because there are 25 militias there, at least. Yeah. They are all Sunni Islamists, but there are many. And they don't answer to him. They do what they want. There is the common denominator of Sunni extremist Islam. But he is just, as they would say in ancient times in Rome, primus inter pares. Yeah. The first among
equals.
Many.
Like the Greek Orthodox Church.
He is one of many, but he got the support of the Turks. But the Turks have also someone there, a power called SNA, the Syrian National Army, thugs, mercenaries in the service of Erdogan, and they are parallel to him, and Erdogan has him, but he has also his mercenaries, and that gives you an idea, it's a jungle. No less than the jungle.
It's a pretty loose band of
absolutely
rebels.
Loose band.
Yeah. And Islamists, secularists, nationalists.
Yeah, and you have the Kurds, and you have the Druze, and you have, it's simply a total mess.
Total mess, yeah. And there's no, yeah, there's lots to, many directions we could go. Yeah. You have a colleague at Memory, which people need to go to memri.org, Memory. They have all kinds of videos and analysis pieces on the whole region. They have translated stuff from Arabic, from Farsi, that's Persian, from Turkish, Urdu, Pashtun, that's Afghanistan. You have Russia and China, you're following
the
them.
The last 10 years also Russian, and Russian the and last Chinese. 5 years also Chinese.
So yes. You're doing a service. This is why you go brief the Pentagon and State, because you know what all they're saying. But you have a colleague, Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, on our, if you watch this webcast on YouTube, we'll put in the comment section some links where you can go read this himself. But he said it was interesting when this al-Julani sweeps down out of that northwest corner near Idlib, takes Aleppo, takes Hama, just passes right through Homs to Damascus, that it was interesting that he went for Damascus while this national Syrian National Army, which is more controlled by they're controlled by Erdogan, they went against the Kurds. That seems to be Erdogan's main, which the Kurds are aligned with the U.S. and Israel. It's quiet alliance, but but it was very telling that they went that way, but he went south, and he's saying the whole country needs rest and calm. It's been a hard civil war. We need to build the country up. We need everyone to come back, which is a good message. But he did it, he sort of declared victory in this Umayyad mosque in Damascus, which also, what's the symbolic value there? And a little more on who this guy is.
The symbolic value is that this was one of the golden eras of Islam, era of occupation. The mosque was built on the St. John the Baptist Church, of course. And this is the Islam stretched from Saudi Arabia, from the borders of China to Spain.
Initial conquest.
Yes, and of course the Umayyad dynasty was headquartered, so to speak, in Syria and spread to the whole Christian world at the time. That was their occupation era. Now, I must say, still, about this Jolani or Ahmad al-Sharia, let's call him in his real name, he is more of a politician than a nationalist, Syrian, than an Islamist. He was in the Islamic State. He left it over 12 years ago. He moved to Al-Qaeda. He left it. 8 years ago. He became every time a different name. Then he became Muslim Brotherhood with Erdogan. He is looking, in essence, is a extreme Syrian nationalist, religious type. And that's why his position is unenviable. Because if he wants to establish a Syria, bad actor, murderers, but if he wants to establish that, he needs to appease everybody, including powers that conflict with each other. So this is what Ambassador Fernandez explains so nice, that Now comes the hard time. It was easy to remove the murderous dynasty of Assad, but what now?
Yeah, he wants to be like a benevolent leader, but in order to stay in power, you got to be a little tough and ruthless.
This is the Middle East. We are not, they talk about, he talks that there will be elections, that he will dismantle HTS as well. I mean, and the Syrian opposition from Europe will come back. Well, I hope to live to see it, both of us.
Well, he got a lot of popular support getting all these folks out of jail, these prisoners. Some of it was very, very pathetic sights. People would be starved to death.
And the people supported him because the first wave, before he puts himself on them, the first days and maybe weeks will be the honeymoon with the people.
And Bashar Assad, he escaped to Moscow. Any hope he plots a comeback from there? I don't see that.
No, I don't think he could. But he can serve in many ways.
And how does this impact the perception of Russia in the Middle East?
Well, not good. It's never good to identify yourself with the loser, number one. But a loser that was such a dictator, it's not good for Russia. I must say that the Russians bear a huge grudge on Turkey because the whole situation was a boiling pot covered with some plastic paper, and the Turks broke it, and they spilled it all, and
there was an agreement.
In Astana, Kazakhstan.
Two or three years ago?
Yeah.
Where the Russians, the Turks, the Iranians
decided to, well, they all calmed Erdogan down, told him, okay, what you got, let's calm the situation.
Because he was driving his tanks into northern Syria.
Yes, and then he decided that now it's the time to break the Astana, and there is a very known philosopher or thinker in Russia, Alexander Dugin. While he is not officially with Putin, he is regarded as representing the nationalist thought of Russia, and he said Erdogan has stabbed us in the back. And he is responsible for everything that happened. So that's, and of course, Erdogan is with Ukraine. How, don't ask me, that's beyond human perceptions or understanding. And the Russians bear huge grudge, the Russians and the Iranians, on Erdogan. What does he say? Erdogan says, well, I tried. I asked Bashar Assad to come to terms, to talk to me, to devise the future of Syria. Why should they talk to you about the future of Syria? This and he did not come. It reminds me, we had in Israel a great poet, Nathan Zach. If I may quote from a poem of his, he said, seven times did the wolf tell the sheep, stop, and then he ate him. So that's Erdogan, I tried. The wolf told the sheep, stop it, and the poor sheep didn't.
So there was an agreement that Erdogan
broke it.
He broke it by training and equipping Gulani and the Syrian National Army
for the day to come.
And within 2 weeks, gone. I don't know. I mean, you can declare Erdogan and Turkey a winner out of this.
Yes.
I think the potential is there.
For them.
It's how much they're going to exploit it. I want to sort of shift our focus, how it impacts Israel, which really has to do how it impacted Iran and especially with Hezbollah in Lebanon. How has this changed the dynamic in Lebanon? They started their offensive out of Idlib towards Aleppo 2 or 3 weeks ago when the day the ceasefire went into place between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Yeah. This was their moment to attack. But it all begins with the impact on Iran. Now that Iran cannot play that game that they played for.
They're a big superpower region. It proved very thin.
All of their proxies are now in despair. Mm. Hezbollah, still there are shooting there, but their benefactor, not only that is gone from the region, the border is now shut down on them. They cannot provide
Israel, weapons. Israel's and bombing all the crossings.
Kurds, and the Kurds are stopping it. And Jolani, who is the Sunni, mm-hmm. who despises them and considers them an enemy.
He hates Hezbollah because they helped push him.
Yes.
They murdered a lot of
Sunni. When we helped him medically 10 years ago, it was of his people injured by Hezbollah. Mm. Now, so this is the main factor, that Iran is not anymore what it used to be. There is a lot of soul searching in Iran now. Mm-hmm. Everybody blames everybody else.
It stands to have the regime swept from power in 2 weeks.
As they say, nothing succeeds like success and nothing fails like failure. And that's a major historic failure for mm-hmm. Iran. Mm-hmm. And they blame each other. And there are seeming pragmatists, reformists, I call them what you want, people who try to deceive the West in a better way than the Islamists, the regime, and they say, had we not projected that offense everywhere in the Middle East, we would have been fine. Mm-hmm. And the others tell them, had we not done what we did, fighting in Syria, we would have long ago been fighting in the streets of Tehran. Mm-hmm. And that's our only way. Okay, that's a Islamist who strives to be, to take over from the Sunnis, the 90%. It's a meshuggah, a crazy thought to begin with.
I find it fascinating that it was
but if
the,
I may
the
say
French
something
who first
about,
put the Alawites in power. It's
but I want to say something about Iran. The new administration comes in, and they want to make peace in the Middle East, and there are those actors, evil actors. How do you do that without a war? Iran stands at the center of all evil. Mm. So, how can you do that? This is important for the administration.
The USA, the new Trump administration.
Right. Iran is made up of 50% Parsis.
Farsi is the original Persians.
Yes. And the other 50% are ethnic minorities.
Bujans,
Balochis, Ahwazis that are Arabs. Kurds and Azeris. And these minorities are being repressed by the Parsis for many years.
Much like in Syria.
And they are fighting for their life, for their rights, mm-hmm. for their situation. Now, this is exactly the time for the United States to help them.
Stir a rebellion.
Help them. They will do without American soldiers anywhere. Yes. They will fight for themselves against the regime. Now, the main thing here, America did it once in Afghanistan with religious types. Mm-hmm. It backfired. Here, there are secular people that fight for the rights. And America should help those secular, not Mujahideen, like they did in Afghanistan, and then it all backfired. No, with secular people, mm-hmm. secular movements. And they are there, mm-hmm. and they are crying for help.
My take, back on Lebanon, my take is that Iran and Hezbollah agreed to a ceasefire with Israel because Israel had weakened Hezbollah so much to a point that they were afraid the Sunni and Christian elements, which is two-thirds of the country of Lebanon, would now try to oust Hezbollah, or that Hezbollah would lose its grip over Lebanese affairs. But I think they're afraid to really force it because of their whole experience with a 15-year civil war. Mm-hmm. And it might not be easy to disarm Hezbollah, what they have left that Israel mm-hmm. didn't destroy, but it will be hard for Hezbollah to rearm like it did after the 2006 war.
That's true, but David, if I may, about numbers of people of sect in Lebanon is a very, it's a, no one knows. They don't do any census, type of, so you don't know really how many.
It's really who's willing to get out there and fight.
Who is really ready to fight. Yeah. And in Beirut, it's mixed. The Hezbollah was mainly with the Shiite in the south. There is a party that is less terroristic,
Amal.
To some extent, Amal, yes, with Nabih Berri, the chairman of the parliament. Since its inception, this Lebanon has a constitution that divides the power in the country between the Christians, the Muslims, and
the Sunnis
Muslims,
and Shiites.
Yes, yeah. And you never know what happened during those years, who is, how many, whoever has the weapons, has the voice, has mm-hmm. the... Now, the Christians, there are amongst them those who want to go for it, but the majority has the bitter experience of the civil war of the 70s, and they don't want, let others do the job for them. They don't want to repeat it. It was such a horrible experience. So I don't think we're going to see the Christians and the Muslims going against Hezbollah. Maybe over the years, as Iran proves to be void of any power anymore to impact its force on the region, maybe then. But they are also people that want to live, not to fight. Mm-hmm. And that's a weakness.
Yes, yeah. But Hezbollah is isolated right now.
Yes, like, definitely.
As they haven't been in decades.
And the fact that they cannot import weapons or smuggle or what, they would put weapons in commercial planes. Mm-hmm. So Israel knew that at some point, some 10 days ago, Israeli fighters came near the airplane full of passengers and told them, go back, we don't want to harm you, go back. And because, okay, there is weapons, but you don't want to harm passengers that don't know what was put in their planes. Mm-hmm. So the pilots understood and went back to Iran.
Tell me, how can Israel take advantage of the new situation? It seems there's a lot that's turned to Israel's favor out of this, but how can they press whatever advantage in Lebanon, in Syria?
Well, first of all, it's a mountainous area. You have to control the high places. Mm-hmm. And that's what Israel is doing.
Went up on the Syrian
the
side
Mount
of the
Hermon. Hermon. And also along the border. To be able to defend Israel, Israel cannot help more. There is one thing that Israel can do, which is important in the Middle East. Iran had proxies everywhere. Mm-hmm. America and Israel had none. America had a little bit of the Kurds, mm-hmm. but didn't really, at some point, it betrayed them mm-hmm. to Erdogan, who murdered them in the thousands. Now, Israel has a duty to support the Druze in Syria mm-hmm. that are...
Right near the border, near the Druze on the Israeli side
right.
of the Golan. Nice people.
And the Druze community in Israel, which is part of the country mm-hmm. and paid a high price in the war, mm-hmm. it's time for Israel to help the Druze in Syria mm-hmm. to create a regular army. All the Druze officers in the IDF mm-hmm. should go and create the army with the support of Israel's Air Force, with the support, to give them the power not to be anymore ruled by any dictator, mm-hmm. Fierce, murderous dictator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was this Operation Good Neighbor For several years, the Israeli military partnered with Christian organizations like us, the Christian Immigrant Involved, sending in medical supplies, baby needs, things like this, and setting up medical centers, clinics, and bunkers and all. We actually sent Christian doctors and nurses in to help. And those villages are now friendly towards Israel because they got help during the Civil War.
And God bless your organization.
So it's almost like an autonomous area near Israel's border, like the Kurds have tried. The Kurds have in northern Iraq and are trying to set up in northeast Syria. Yeah. But you had that in South Lebanon with the SLA, the South Lebanese Army. Is it going to work?
But let me tell you something about this situation all over the Middle East. These are the results of the colonial era.
Yes.
The colonial era brought together communities that don't come together. Mm. Iraq is Basra, Baghdad, Mosul. They don't. In Libya, the Italians in 1911 brought together two communities, Tripoli and Benghazi. They don't come together, and Fezzan down south. They made them together. It cracks down. It doesn't work. The French did it in Syria. It cracks down.
It's different clans. It's totally different religious sects.
Everything.
Not all of them Islam.
Yeah. In Africa, the colonialist powers did horrible thing. They drew lines that teared apart tribes and family of tribes according to their, it all cracks down now. Mm-hmm. It cannot hold together except by crazy, murderous dictators, and their time is coming. Mm-hmm. So it's time for a new development in the Middle East, something that is more answering to the realities. Mm-hmm.
Any chance that Jordan gets destabilized?
Well, Jordan is looking at what happened, and they are finally, they can't tell you how happy they are.
About Syria falling
out of
Russia.
About Iran falling down. Because the Iranians tried to topple down the regime in Jordan through the Muslim Brotherhood.
The Hashemite monarch.
The Hashemite, through the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm. And they helped them, and they sent them weapons, and they sent through them to the West Bank. And now, no Iran? Wow. Mm. They are just, they don't understand from where they got this blessing. Well, it's a combination of Israel and Jordan.
Okay. And last question. We've got so much out of you in this, but how does this impact? First of all, I think the Golan is Israel's forever out of this, but how does it impact Gaza, and are we going to see a hostage deal soon? I turn to you just days after October 7, that horrible tragedy. You and I had conversations before we went on air, and I just appreciate you know everything you said. Is that tragedy going to start coming to closure now?
I'm afraid not yet, because of one element that is not known. I wrote in several pieces what every vegetables vendor and taxi driver in the Middle East knows: what is the role of Qatar? This emirate of evil that pretends to be an ally of the United States, an ally of, and they are the foremost supporters of Islamist terrorism. They see themselves as Wahhabis and Muslim Brotherhood at the
radical,
same time.
Radical Islam.
Radical Islam, the most radical movement in
Qaradari,
Islam.
Qaradari, the sheikh who sort of
Ibn
preaches
Abdul
this.
Ibn Abdul Wahhab. In the Emirates, you have a church, a mosque, and a synagogue together to represent interreligious understanding. In Qatar, one mosque, Muhammad Ibn Abdul Wahhab Mosque. And if you read the speech of the Emir, the father of the present Emir, in the inauguration, you see the dawah, the propagation of this extremist Islam in the spirit of modern times. This is Muslim. They pretend, they put out the face of modern people. They are funding all the terrorists. They funded the Taliban in Afghanistan, and then they presented themselves as mediators. They funded Hamas, they keep funding them now, and they are the mediators. They, in every country in the Muslim world,
they go and
world,
start a fire and say, we'll help put it out.
In every country where there is a battle between Islamists and secularists, they are on the side of the Islamists. This, if the new administration will understand what is the role of Qatar, which is responsible for 9/11, because the mastermind of 9/11 was a Qatari former government employee. And they managed somehow to confuse everybody about their own.
Khaled Sheikh Mohammed.
Mohammed, yes, yes. And we wrote about
he tried
about
the
it.
First World Trade Center truck bombing.
Yeah, and then
years later,
the second
did
one.
The second one.
And how can America collaborate with this? Because they pretend they are the arsonist pretending to be the firefighter.
Yeah, yeah.
And before that ends, there will be no end to the Gaza tragedy.
And because Qatar is still supporting Hamas.
Yes, yes.
And supporting it's only Qatar them. Pressure on Hamas that will get the hostages out.
And Qatar has to be there with pressure. People say, oh, but we have there the base. Who owes whom a favor? America owes them a favor for the win? No. The ruling family owes America for having the base there.
If the U.S. left?
Oh, within a week, the ruling
the
family
other Arab,
is gone.
The Arab, has gone. Other Arab countries would sweep them out.
They tried to do it in 2017.
The Saudis were sending columns out the peninsula
to take them over. Because
stopped.
They are blocking the development of the Middle East to
the Abraham Accords.
The Abraham Accords.
Yeah.
And they are doing it in such talent of deception that it's unbelievable.
Well, you have to want to be deceived for it to be that
that's
effective.
That's true also.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we really appreciate Dr. Yigal Carmon, president and
doctor,
founder of Memory.
Yes, the Middle East Media. I'm not a doctor. I dedicated my life to
I'm giving you an
service.
Honorary doctorate today,
thank you.
My friend.
Thank you. God bless.
He's really a world-class expert on the Middle East, on the Islamic world, and counterterrorism. And we appreciate having him today. Again, on our YouTube, when we post this on our YouTube channel, we'll have in the notes some other reading materials coming out of Memory, his monitoring organization by Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, that gives you more background on this. The new rulers of Syria, Erdogan seems to have some sway. How much is he going to exploit it? Al-Julani has a precarious position, trying to be a de facto leader there, being benevolent and tough at the same time. But we'll see where these things go. But I know I understand it a lot better now after talking to my friend Yigal. God bless you from Jerusalem. We'll see you. We're going to take a break for the holidays. We'll see you in January, early January, with our next webinar. And meanwhile, at the top of the hour, 4 o'clock every day, you can join our global prayer gathering, praying with Christians all over the world for Israel, the Middle East, and your own nation. Wishing you a warm shalom and holiday greetings from Jerusalem.